All right, we're in the book of Revelation. Today we're going to talk about the King reigns. He reigns for 1,000 years. We looked at this last week. We were in Revelation 20, and we looked at 1 through 15, because we went all the way through to the great white throne judgment. But today I want to focus on just the kingdom itself. And the king comes and reigns for 1,000 years. And in Revelation 21 through 10, this is revealed. It's revealed for the first time in the chronology of the New Testament. The Apostle John is on the island of Patmos as an old man in 95 AD, and he gets this revelation. It's the first time in history that God has revealed that his kingdom will be a kingdom on earth that will have a 1,000-year segment and then go on into eternity. In the Jewish scriptures, the kingdom was looked upon as a kingdom upon the earth, that the land had been promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to the nation of Israel, and that land was theirs forever and ever, is what the Old Testament taught. And here God comes and reveals, says, yes, it's going to be a kingdom on earth for Israel in the land as promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But that is going to be just a 1,000-year period. Then that 1,000 years will come to an end. There will be a great white throne judgment. And then the saints of the nation of Israel, of the church, of all ages, will go on into the eternal state in the New Jerusalem. So the question then is, what is the kingdom? Augustine came along and defined it as, this is the kingdom, is the church on earth. He wrote a book called The City of God, and he defined eschatology for the world from really that point on. Augustinian theology, as far as the reference to the kingdom, really set the tone for the Roman Catholic Church and the Reformers on down to our day. And most churches, in their view of the future, are Augustinian. And that means we're in the kingdom now. The church is the kingdom. He taught that the church on earth would only last for 1,000 years. So when the year 1,000 rolled around, they thought, this is going to be it. This is going to be the 1,000 years. This is the end of the reign of the church. And now Jesus is going to come and take everybody away. And that's where you get the line in the Apostles' Creed. He will come to judge the living and the dead. Bang, all on one day. The saved will go to heaven. The lost will go to hell. Very simple. We're in the kingdom. Kingdom's going to come to an end. And Jesus is going to come on one day and just separate everybody. And the saved are going to go to heaven. The lost are going to go to hell. What is the kingdom? Is it the church? Is it heaven? Is it the millennium? Is it none of these? Or is it all of these? The majority view is that the church is the kingdom. The majority view of most Christians is the kingdom is heaven. And the heaven is defined kind of a Platonic view. It's this kind of spiritual ether place where everybody's in kind of a spiritual body with floating around, playing a harp. And, of course, many times saints have wings. They're given wings and look like angels. And there's really no real defined place. It just said it's the good place to go when you die. You go to ask the average person on the street, are you going to go to heaven when you die? 80%, this is a survey that was done, will say, yes, I'm going to heaven. Why? Well, because I'm basically a good person. And I think on balance, I'm going to go to heaven. So, well, do you want to go there today? Well, no, I don't want to go today, but I do think I'm going to end up there. Is it the millennium? And this, we have the view, this is basically a very Jewish flavor. The millennium is usually defined as a place where Jesus is going to reign in Israel. And so it's really kind of a focus on the physical. And, of course, this is why the, quote, spiritual people reject this, because they say, well, physical is evil and spiritual is good. So we don't want a kingdom on earth. Is it none of these? Maybe it's none of these. No, I'm going to propose to you that it's all of these. And that's what I'm going to show you today. So when we look at kingdom, we have to go back to the Jewish scriptures, and we go back to Daniel. And this is the return of Jesus as prophesied by Daniel. And this is the Son of Man coming in the cloud. And the Son of Man comes in the cloud, and to him is given dominion. And it's dominion over all people and all nations. It's everlasting. Notice it lasts forever. And it's his kingdom. And look at the last line. It's not going to be destroyed. Now look, there's no mention of 1,000 years. Because it's looked at in the Jewish scriptures as once it begins and he takes it, it's going to last forever. And that's true. But it's not true. You see what I mean? Because we don't have the full revelation in this passage in the book of Daniel. Now we have a full revelation. We understand, yeah, Jesus is going to come reign for 1,000 years and then go on and reign forever and ever in the glory of the New Jerusalem. Now this is the next part we're going to come to. Because Jesus himself prophesied that he would come just like Daniel said. So the return of Jesus prophesied by Daniel, the Son of Man in the clouds, Jesus says, yeah, I agree with him, and he quotes him in Matthew 24. So the kingdom is Jewish because the king is Jewish. The Romans had it right when they put the sign above his head on the cross, the king of the Jews. The kingdom is worldwide. It's not just Jewish. It includes all Gentiles from all nations, all peoples, tribes, and tongues. The Hebrew Scriptures always talked about a kingdom in which it included men of all peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations. This is what the early apostles struggled with, because they were all Jewish. And they struggled with this concept of how can a Gentile be part of the kingdom and not be circumcised and not be Jewish and not obey the law? And that's why they had the Jerusalem Council. And James got up and said, look, it's always been written. Go to the book of Amos and look. It's always been written that the Gentiles, the Goyim, the nations, were to be part of the kingdom without being Jewish. Because there's a distinction in the millennium between the Jewish leaders and the nations who serve Israel. And of course, that's again part of the Hebrew Scriptures. The nations will serve Israel under the King of Israel. Now, the kingdom of God is everlasting. It lasts forever. That's what the Hebrew Scriptures tell us. What I'm going to show you today is that's the way we should look at it as well. It's everlasting. It has a beginning, and it goes on forever. And the kingdom is on the earth. But it's not on the earth forever. It's only on the earth for a period of 1,000 years. Now, the kingdom was talked about in the book of Daniel as being on earth as a political kingdom which would put an end to all future kingdoms, and in Daniel 2:30-2:35, which is this dream that Nebuchadnezzar has about the kingdoms of the world, the final kingdom is a stone is cut out without hands. It strikes the statue that Nebuchadnezzar sees on the feet, which is the depiction of all Gentile nations that are going to be ruling over not only Jerusalem but basically the Western world, until the stone strikes the statue, becomes a great mountain, and fills the whole earth. Now that's the key phrase. The stone, cut out without hands, becomes a great mountain and fills the whole earth. Strikes the image on the feet, which is at the end of history. Go to Micah and look at what is that mountain that Micah later talks about. It comes about in the last days. The mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains, the greatest mountain. And it says there that all peoples will stream to it. Now Micah 4:3 goes on to say that he will judge between many peoples. Who's the he? Got to be the king that's in this kingdom, that's in the chief of the mountains. And of course the mountain is becoming a kingdom which is going to fill the whole earth, rule over the whole earth. And he will judge between many peoples and render decisions for many distant nations. That the nations are going to be part of this kingdom and will be responsible to this chief mountain, which is the nation Israel. Look at this line here. This is interesting. Then they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they train for war. So through this 1,000 years, there's not going to be training for war. But we know from the book of Revelation that something happens at the end of the 1,000 years, that there is a rebellion led by Satan, who's let out of his abyss, his chamber that we looked at last week, and he's going to rise up and find enough people to follow him. They're going to number the sand of the seashores, and they will attack the holy city. But up until this point, there's no war at all in the millennial kingdom. Now look at this. This is outside the UN. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. This is from Isaiah 2:4. Almost an identical quote to Micah. Now, really, do you think the UN will be able to bring in the kingdom? So let's go back. The king reigns. What do we learn? That the Son of Man is judge over all the nations. And the Son of Man is king over all the nations. Now I'm going to ask you a question. Where do resurrected saints live in the kingdom, in the millennial kingdom? Jesus Christ comes. There's going to be physical saints that are going to be under his rule. And we saw that as we studied our way through the book of Revelation with the sealing of the 144,000, and those they bring in, people who are gathered when Jesus comes back to Jerusalem, these are going to be gathered in physical bodies. People are going to be populating the millennial kingdom who've come out of the tribulation. It couldn't be from anywhere else. They're not going to get imported from Mars or anywhere else, or some aliens from another planet. They're going to be physical people who survived the tribulation. It's possible some of these people would be alive in this age, in the church age, not be taken in the rapture, become believers in the tribulation, and somehow survive the whole 7 years. And that's possible, very possible. But these people are going to have children. Now, these children are going to be born just like you and me, and just like sons of Adam, with sin nature. And some of these children are going to get saved. Some of these children are going to be unsaved. And many of them are going to go on and live through the millennial kingdom and live the 1,000 years. Because again, remember, we looked at it last week, Satan is released from the abyss and he comes up, and what's he find? Numbers like sand of the seashore willing to follow him. Where are they going to come from? They're not, again, they're not imported aliens from somewhere else. These are people who are alive and physically alive during the millennial kingdom. Here we have the saved and the unsaved physical descendants of these physical saints who've entered the millennial kingdom will be living in this kingdom under Jesus Christ's rule. Now, where are we? We are glorified saints. We are on the thrones ruling with Jesus Christ during the millennial reign. Being the church, we have a unique position in that we are called the bride of Jesus Christ, as opposed to friends of the bridegroom, who are Old Testament believers and tribulation believers. We have that unique, intimate position as being his bride, serving with him from his glorious throne. Now, where is his glorious throne? Well, there's a throne in Jerusalem. There's a city of Jerusalem. We saw that in the book of Micah. This is the chief of the mountains. There will be a temple there. There will be priests there. There will be a prince there who will be overseeing all of temple worship. And this will be the seat of the government of Israel, which will be the reigning nation over all the world. Here's where it gets tricky. There's also a new Jerusalem. And that's where the throne of the Lamb is, in the new Jerusalem. Glorified saints, we as glorified saints, and we in the church age especially, being the bride of Christ, will dwell in the new Jerusalem. That will be our home. We will not be earthbound. Now, will we have access to earth? Absolutely. Think of it this way. Jesus himself, he was able to eat with them. He was able to communicate with them. He was able to be touched by them. He had a physical body. This wasn't something that, it wasn't a ghost. It wasn't something that you ran your hand through. They could touch him. They could hug him. They could hold him. They could eat with him. But he had access to heaven at any second, at any moment. He could be in Galilee one second and Jerusalem in the next. He could go through a locked door. Remember when they're in the room and they're locked and Thomas says, unless I see him, I'm not going to believe he's really alive. And he, poof, he appears in the room. Physically, that's a glorified body. That's a perfect example of a resurrected body. And I believe that's why he did that, because he's called the first fruits of the resurrection. He's the first example of the harvest of souls to come who are going to have glorified bodies in the future. Being able to communicate with the people on the earth, and yet we have instant access to this place called the New Jerusalem. We're going to see, too, that people on earth have some access to this New Jerusalem as well. It's going to be visible, they're going to be to see it, and they're going to be able to approach it in worship. Now, what happens at the end of the 1,000 years, we know, is the second death, the great white throne judgment. And what happens at the great white throne judgment? That Jerusalem physically disappears. Remember we read in Revelation 20, verses 11 through 15, especially in verse 11, says, I saw the great white throne and him who sat upon it, and from whose presence, what happened to heaven and earth? They fled away. They're gone. So now the physical Jerusalem is gone. The heaven and earth that existed in the millennial kingdom, it's gone. Notice it says it fled away. All the saved people from the millennial kingdom are translated and given glorified bodies, and then all taken to the new Jerusalem, which then goes on for eternity. The question I posed is, where do resurrected saints live? We have access, and our dwelling and our home is with the King, especially those of us in the church, in the New Jerusalem. And the New Jerusalem lasts forever. And so when you read Revelation 21 and 22, you're reading about, quote, heaven, actual literal place, and will come to be in visible form during the millennial kingdom, and it's where we will live. And we will be there and serve there forever. And so you get this blending, you get this kind of a blended picture in 21 and 22. I'm going to show you some things. In fact, this is a guy named David Larson. He wrote a book called Jews, Gentiles, and the Church, which I highly recommend. Here's what he says in his book. Somewhere in this universe there exists a new Jerusalem, the city of God, which will descend from heaven and exist like a giant space module in relation to the earth. He's trying to describe this in words we would understand. The garden city of God would be like a huge chandelier over the earth. The saved nations will walk in light of it. He got this idea of the huge chandelier from a guy named Lewis Talbot. And Lewis Talbot began Talbot Seminary in California and the Open Door Church in Los Angeles. And he was pastor there for many years in the 30s. He was replaced by someone I'm sure you all know, J. Vernon McGee. He held the same view that Lewis Talbot did. But this is where David Larson got in his idea about this being a chandelier that hangs over the earth. I think it's a pretty good image. The other one is Dwight Pentecost, a book called Things to Come, which I say, if you don't have that in your library, you should get it. It's a classic work. The dwelling place prepared for the bride is the New Jerusalem, in which the Old Testament and Tribulation saints find their place, is moved down into the air to remain over the land of Israel during the millennium, during which time the resurrected saints exercise their right to reign. We're reigning on thrones with him. These saints are in their eternal state, and the city enjoys its eternal glory. So people on the physical earth, the physical bodies, will have access to those of us who are in glorified bodies to advise them and to lead them and to protect them, and just like Jesus did with his apostles when he came back from the dead. This dwelling place prepared for the bride, David Larson says, already exists. Look at this. Hebrews 11:10 says this, "For he, Abraham, was looking for what? The city, not a city." It's very clear in the Greek New Testament. He's looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. I think Abraham had a glimpse of this. That's why when he said to Lot, he said, "Look, you take the land you want and I'll take whatever you leave me." He had no desire to find a beautiful place in this world because he had seen a glimpse of this heavenly city. He says, "I know where I'm going. I don't need anything down here." And so Lot looked around and he saw what? The beautiful valley, Sodom and Gomorrah, the beautiful cities, the beautiful land. And he opted for that, and Abraham stayed up on the hills. 8:5, look at this. "Not only is there a city in heaven, but what's saying, Hebrew 8:5 says, a priest serve a copy and a shadow of heavenly things, earthly priests. Just as Moses was warned by God when he was about to erect the tabernacle in the wilderness, see that you make things according to the pattern which was shown you on the mountain." Moses was shown the tabernacle and temple in heaven, which we see in Revelation chapter 4 and 5 is a throne room of God. And the Holy of Holies is a 15 foot by 15 foot by 15 foot cube. When we come to the book of Revelation, it says heaven is a 1500 mile by 1500 mile by 1500 mile cube. In 9:24, Christ did not enter a holy place made with hands when he resurrected and ascended and went back to glory, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Is heaven the New Jerusalem? I think so. Heaven is the New Jerusalem where we will dwell. It's not a holy place made with hands. It means it's a holy place made without hands. What did it say about the mountain that strikes the image on the feet? It's a stone made without hands. See the connections here? The kingdom, mountain, which fills the earth. You have this is God's work. It's not man's work. Now, I'm going to show you a picture, and no picture I can show you is going to do justice to what I think the reality of what the New Jerusalem is. A New Jerusalem visible over the land of Israel, this 1,500-mile structure with access to earth. That's the best depiction I have. But I think it's best to read the scriptures. Let the scriptures describe it for you. So here we have 21:3. Let's look at that. 21:3. This is the throne of the eternal kingdom. "I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them." You go down in verse 4. "He shall wipe every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, and there shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away." I think this is describing this holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready like a bride adorned for her husband, like a bride, carrying on that symbolism of the church being the bride and the church being the actual foundation of this city. But I want to draw your attention to a couple things. The tabernacle of God is among men. That is the focal point of this, that this is the tabernacle of God among men, God dwelling among men, as Jesus prayed, "Oh God, our Father, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Let your kingdom come." And it says, "He shall wipe every tear from their eyes." Who's he doing this for? Well, I think you got to go back to Revelation 7. Who's described in Revelation 7? Well, first of all, in the first part of the chapter, the sealing of the 144,000 are described. 12,000 Jews from the 12 tribes of Israel. 144,000 Jews are going to be ministering in the tribulation period, calling men to salvation. 7:9 on through the end of the chapter shows the results of their ministry. A great multitude from every tribe, nation, people, and tongue, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes and palm branches in their hands. Why palm branches? Because these are physical people who survived the tribulation celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths, which is a symbol of the coming millennial age in the festivals of Israel. It is the only feast of the seven that has not been fulfilled prophetically, literally. All the rest have seen fulfillment. The last one being Pentecost. The one before that, Feast of First Fruits. The one before that, Passover. All fulfilled historically. This is the only one that has not been fulfilled historically, is the Feast of Tabernacles, because it looks forward to the millennial reign. And here you are, you have this multitude standing with the 144,000 before the throne and before the Lamb, access to the Lamb's throne, just like it was depicted in chapters 4 and 5. That throne is now being seen from earth. Look at 14 through 17. It goes on to say, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation. So when John says, who are these people? The angel says, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation. They've survived it. For this reason, they're before the throne of God. He who sits on the throne shall spread his tabernacle over them. He's going to protect them. It goes on to say, they shall hunger no more, they shall thirst no more, nor shall the sun beat down on them, nor any heat, for the Lamb is in the center of the throne, will be their shepherd, and shall guide them to the springs of the water of life, which flows out of the New Jerusalem. And God shall wipe away every tear from their eyes. And if you take this passage and compare it to Psalm 23, which is a psalm of comfort and guidance after severe trial. Lo, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Yet, see, Psalm 23 has meaning literally and historically. And I think Psalm 23 is a reference looking at what's going to happen when the king returns as the shepherd to shepherd these people who have come through and survived the tribulation. And now are going to go into the millennial kingdom, and they're going to be comforted and cared for by this great shepherd. You know what's fascinating to me about Psalm 23? Follows the psalm that describes this same shepherd hanging on a cross in Psalm 22. Psalm 22 is also prophetic. It's talking about Jesus suffering on the cross. The suffering Messiah in 22 and the shepherd returning to care for his people, to spread this table before his people in Psalm 23. For he shall set the table before thine enemies. There's two women and two cities involved here in this book, and I think we have to look at that. And Revelation 17, we've already seen that. And I want you to notice the language here. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and says, look, I'm going to show you the great harlot. And he carried me away in the spirit to a wilderness. And he showed him the city, Babylon the Great. Look at this. One of the seven angels who had seven bowls full of the last seven plagues. Same language in Revelation 21:9. Came and spoke and says, come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. New Jerusalem promised to replace the evil city which persecuted the tribulation saints. You have a contrast showing John two cities, and one city is going to replace another. The city that is the New Jerusalem has now come to welcome them to a new kingdom and a new leader, Jesus Christ on his throne in his new city with his bride and all of the other saints who've now been resurrected to rule with him. Now it's also the city of the eternal kingdom, because the New Jerusalem never ends. Only Babylon comes to an end. I think there's some clues in chapter 21. It says, I saw no temple in it. In what? In this new city. For the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. Now there is a temple in the physical Jerusalem on earth. But in the heavenly Jerusalem, the Lamb and God Almighty are the temple. They are the tabernacle. And the city had no need of the sun or the moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God has illumined the city, is what it's talking about. And its lamp is the Lamb. Now, notice it doesn't say that there is no sun or moon, does it? It says this city has no need of a sun or a moon. It's in the city there's no need for the sun and the moon. Look at this, 24. The nations shall walk by its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory into it. The kings of the earth, what earth? I think it's the millennial earth. And the kings come up, and it says in Zechariah 14, the kings of the earth come up once a year to honor the King Jesus at the Feast of Tabernacles. That's the one feast we know that's going to be carried on, if you will, as a festival during the millennial reign. Look at this one. On either side of the river was a tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month.
There's still going to be months.
And the leaves of the tree were for the healing. That word for healing there is not healing from disease necessarily. It's therapeutic. It could be for anything you would do for your well-being, for the healing of the nations. Bring greater refreshment to the world. Revelation 21:1, John says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away. There's no longer any sea. There's no longer anything to divide a new heaven and a new earth. I think that's describing 2011. The old heaven and the old earth have fled away. And now there's a new heaven and a new earth. And he stops. And he goes on to then talk about the city. The city that begins in the millennial kingdom and goes on forever. In light of these clues, there's nations, there's months. In eternity, there is no more time. There's no more sun. There's no more moon. It's new heavens and new earth. Everything's passed away. He's still talking about a place where there's time, fruit every month. Does this city go on into eternity? Yes. The city's there during the 1,000 years and goes on into eternity. Revelation 22:5, there shall no longer be night. Again, you have that same line, they shall not have need of light, of a light or a light of the sun. There will come a time when there is no sun as we know it and is no more moon as we know it. During the millennial kingdom, there will be a sun and a moon. Point to make here is this city goes on forever and ever. So what do you have here? I think you have a blend of facts and a blend of revelation where God is saying this city that's already in existence, according to the testimony of Abraham in the book of Hebrews, is going to come down out of heaven. It's going to be physically visible. We are going to have access in our glorified bodies to the earth, but yet our dwelling place will be there. And we're going to be there ruling over the earth for the 1,000 years. And the 1,000 years has ended. We will watch the great white throne judgment, and we will then go on to live in the New Jerusalem in its eternal state. And I think there's a blending of ideas here. Now, is it important to be able to make this distinction and to see it? Maybe not in our everyday lives. Maybe not, perhaps, in what we do tomorrow. But I think it helps to come to the Scriptures and say, what is it that describes the millennial kingdom and how we live in it? I think it gives us a better focus. I think it's almost like Abraham had. He had an image in his mind of something he'd been shown, and it drove his life. And I think the better we can see and picture in our minds what is being revealed in the Scriptures about our future, that drives our life. This is worth living for. This is worth it. And next week, we're going to look at the earthly side of the kingdom. What will it be like for the people on the earth in their physical bodies? Dear Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for the revelation of the coming city and the coming glory.